This week on Out Now with Aaron and Abe, we're talking Kung Fu Panda 4.
The fourth installment on the fourth day of the fourth year of the fourth century of the fourth millennia? This is insane.
Hadoosh.
Wait a minute, I forgot my introduction.
We are now recording, and this is Out Now with Aaron and Abe. I am Aaron, and as always, this is...
Abe, hello! How are you, Aaron?
I'm doing well on the morning of Hollywood's biggest night. Ooh. It's arrived once again.
Whoa.
I know. Exciting times to find out how many Oscars Nolan is going to win tonight. That's going to be a... And of course, the Bong
Joon. We don't know this for sure.
The Bong Joon-ho test of will he make them kiss? That's the
exactly,
other
the
big over under.
That's the biggest, probably the biggest betting prop that's out tonight.
Like he does it, points to the camera and says, "For you, Bong." which, well, obviously, more people should do that in general. For you, Bong.
100%. 100%.
Abe, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. Thank you for asking. It is a great day, I guess, for Hollywood, even though I'm up here in Northern California. And you know what? Enjoy all the festivities in Southern California. I'm sure that you guys are going to have a great night tonight. And, you know, you guys aren't going to fuck up anything at all.
I saw because they have all the, like, they keep announcing like presenters for the Oscars. And I saw Tim Robbins on there.
Hey,
I'm like, it's 2024. So I'm like, oh, Shawshank Redemption reunion. Let's see it happen. Maybe they'll pour it out.
Oh, I thought Tim Robinson.
Tim Robinson's going to be.
I think you should leave now.
He's going to come out in a big hot dog suit. Exactly. Yeah. That's what's going on.
I guess Tim Robbins is fine.
What if it was Tim Robbins and Tim Robinson?
That'd be pretty funny, actually.
Tim Robbins is a goofball. He's in like Anchorman and stuff. He could do some jokes.
Yeah, you saw him be funny in Shawshank Redemption.
He's hilarious in Shawshank. Yeah, that scene where he plays the record that Bob Gunton's outside the door,
like banging on the door.
We should do this for another 5 minutes talking about Shawshank
totally
Redemption.
Yeah. Remember when he was just like, "Oh, this suit fits me so well. It's almost as if I tailored it for my own size."
We should really though actively campaign to get Tim Robbins on. I think he should leave season 5. That should be.
How do we do that? Do we have any of their phone numbers?
Well, you just email Tim Robbins at tim.robbins@gmail.com, and I'm sure he'll come right up. So.
Okay.
What if that's it? I bet I nailed that one.
Oh, it's asking me to download something. Hold on.
Yes. So I don't know, it's a film podcast where Abe and I discuss new movies weekly. We dig into film media, most for your review, the occasional commentary track, or some other film movie topic. This is episode 568, 568.
Whoop, whoop. 568. I don't have anything planned.
Okay, good. And Joy, we had enough already in the opening here. And for this episode, we're talking Kung Fu Panda 4. The fourth Kung Fu Panda.
Ka-chow.
Exactly. The right franchise. Ka-chow.
Yeah. Yeah, right?
Mornings are fun. Even in a morning show in a little bit.
Yeah.
Joining us to discuss Kung Fu Panda 4, we have creator of the Alexander Robinson YouTube channel. Much of his ideas for Inner Peace feature giant monsters destroying notable landmarks. It's Alexander Robinson.
Hi there. And that is very accurate.
Nailed it. Hi, Alexander. How are you doing today?
I'm doing pretty good. It's a thing. Well, you know, if something goes wrong, it will at least make a good story.
This is true.
That is the way it will be framed. That's for sure.
How long are your news cycles in Southern California for these Hollywood things? Less than 24 hours?
Well, it depends on the severity. If it's, you know, somebody like sat on a cushion wrong, that probably fades in like an hour. But if, you know, comedian gets slapped in the face by Megastar, that kind of lasts a little longer.
Yeah, or this movie won Best Picture for 2 minutes.
Yeah.
They still haven't lived that one down.
Oh.
So yeah,
who was the other presenter with Warren Beatty on that night?
Faye Dunaway.
Faye Dunaway, yeah.
Bonnie and Clyde.
Yeah, it was Faye Dunaway who actually said it, but all the blame went on Warren Beatty,
right.
Even though
and
he
Beatty's
was
like,
"Look,
I'm trying to
figure
this,
out
guys.
What happened."
She exited stage left and was like, "I'm out of here."
Yeah.
And it's like, no, we were together in another like execution scene in the 60s. We don't want to witness this again. I'm out of here.
Let's be clear. The real problem was the people that handed them the envelope that were busy taking selfies on their cell phone. They're like, you know what? Who cares what envelope it is? We should not look.
Yeah.
And that's how 2017 happened. Okay, so Alexander, glad you're back here with us. Glad you're here to join us to talk Kung Fu Panda 4 and more. Let's get to some show notes first, real quick. First up, commentary tracks. Every month we do a commentary, and for the first several months of this year, we have a theme for our commentaries. It is, you guessed it, the Pirates of the Caribbean movies.
Hey.
And this week, actually, we're recording our third Pirates commentary for At World's End, which is going to be certainly a long episode, because that is not a short movie.
No, it's not.
Testing the lengths of our podcasting capabilities. But that is what's going to be going down. I'll be recording that very soon at the time of this recording. So stay tuned for that one, which will join our other Pirates commentaries and all of our episodes, which can be found on iTunes or Spotify, which you can also go there and give us a rating or review, which would be great.
Thank you so much, everyone.
Exactly. What else? Of course, as I mentioned, Hollywood's Biggest Night, the 96th Academy Awards, are arriving very soon. We have a prediction special that we've already posted. By the time this episode is released, you'll have both of these episodes about to mention. But we have a prediction special that was up. That was a lot of fun. Abe, Terrence, and myself recorded that one. And we will have a results show immediately following the Oscars, which, again, will already be out by the time you hear this episode. So if you haven't listened to those shows already, make sure to go back and do it. You're going to hear
it. As if we're planning shows in the past or something.
Well, the real key is that we're talking about this and we haven't done those yet, but we're going to hop in our DeLorean and go back in time, then record those shows, put them out there. Then they'll be there all along. So I don't want to cross anybody's eyes here, but it's a whole deal.
Aaron, you know what this is?
Yeah.
Temporal time pincher.
It's a temporal time. It's a temporal pincer movement. Exactly.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. Then we're doing it the hard way. You know,
whose protocol?
Oh, cowboy shit.
Harris, my friend.
Okay, so all that's out of the way. Let's move on. Let's get to.
I want to add one more.
Oh yeah, what?
Legendary anime director Akira Toriyama passed away this past week at age 68, and the results from the internet were nothing less than stellar. The love poured out from all over the globe. It was a very beautiful sight to see, and rest in peace to Akira. But an impact he had across the globe!
Explain who that is exactly for everybody.
He's the director creator of Dragon Ball Z and Dragon Ball, and his influence is unmatched, unparalleled. I didn't realize that it was like this large until his passing, but. Obviously, if you've seen Dragon Ball, Dragon Ball Z, or aware of it, you've probably tried drawing some of these things yourself, including the crazy hair from Goku and everybody else. But pretty notable passing. And again, I just was very moved by the all the love and support that came afterward.
Yeah, for sure. I have not nearly as much familiarity with Dragon Ball and Dragon Ball Z as I know you do, but like I. Just seeing the news all of a sudden, and then it was like slowly confirmed. It's like, oh boy, that's quite the legacy. So it was very spiriting to see. It's like so much praise and love and what have you for. Okay, well let's move on now. Let's get some out of cookies.
Trademark.
Each week, not that way. We go to the week that's out of cookies.
Trademark.
All right.
Yeah.
Alexander, what have you been watching recently?
Quite a bit of I guess older stuff. A couple of days ago at work, we had a special screening of Psycho.
Ooh. Oh,
I think it was the first time I ever saw it in a theater. The way my work is, because I work at Universal Studios Hollywood. It was after park hours, and we actually used the Kung Fu Panda Theater to show Psycho since the park was closed. And that was the only theater we could actually use. So that was cool. I saw the Grindhouse the first time last week, actually.
You'd never seen Grindhouse.
Rodriguez's Planet Terror and Tarantino's Death Proof. No, I haven't. It's an interesting experiment, I think. I feel like it was better seeing it in a theater. But even then, like the two movies don't really feel as authentically exploitation as the movies they're trying to mimic.
I'd say that for Planet Terror for sure, which I like, but I do think it's very much trying to create a thing that wasn't really what that is. Where Death Proof I mean, Tarantino knows that. Like, Tarantino knows that world pretty obviously.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, yeah, Planet Terror, because that movie has a bunch of, like bunch of explosions and giant set pieces where you're like, no movie back then would afford that. And my I think I like Death Proof. I'd like Death Proof more, but the last half, it looks so clean and looks like a movie made in 2007, to where it's kind of off-putting. I mean, in my opinion, I think Black Dynamite did a better job of being an homage to the 70s exploitation or blaxploitation movies.
Mm-hmm.
I can agree with that as far as execution goes. I think, yeah, Tarantino, I think he's too happy to make just a fucking great car chase to really care about the aesthetic at that point. It's just like, it looks very good.
I mean, he succeeded in that car chase.
Yeah.
And so you watch Grindhouse, you didn't watch them separately, you watch like actual Grindhouse. So you got the trailers in between as well, of course.
Yeah. And where's Edgar Wright's Don't?
Well, as we've established, we only make the actual movies from the trailers every like 7 or 8 years between each other. So we have to wait a while because we just got Thanksgiving.
Apparently so. So yeah,
that's the rule. That's what we've established.
We're putting that out in the universe in 8 years from now.
We'll get Don't.
Yeah.
All right. Anything else?
Not much else. I mean, Dune Part 2, which I liked. I'm not quite in love with it like everyone else, but it's kind of, the more I've sat on it, the more it's grown on me as opposed to Part One.
Fair enough.
Cool.
When you say opposed to Part One, do you mean you like Part One more, or you're less fan of Part One?
I'm not so much a fan of Part One, but I feel like I need to go back and rewatch that movie now that Part Two is out, which I haven't had the time to do.
Well, you got to watch the Grindhouse version where they show Part One. they show the fake trailer for, I don't know, Snow Crash and Fahrenheit 451. Then they play Part Two. So
exactly. Yeah.
What if that was a thing?
doing that, yeah. You know,
Robert Rodriguez is Snow Crash.
Good idea.
Abe, how about you? You weren't on last week, unfortunately. What did you think of Dune 2?
Thank you for reading my text message. I was curious what you were going to do with like dramatic interpretation. Not a lot. That's okay. And then I was also like, oh, he didn't read the first text I sent him, which is tell the listeners that the sandworms got me.
Oh yeah. I did not read that part.
No, that's all right. But thank you for covering. You guys did a great job. Very in-depth discussion. I think it lasted like 2 hours. But I quite enjoyed Dune 2. I've seen it twice at that point. Obviously, from Aaron's reading of my text, where I did it for the fans, I guess. You should see my face right now. I'm just like, what? I thought it was better on the second watch, mostly because I was able to kind of process a lot more of the political ideologies going on from multiple people. But I thought it was a fascinating read on how one person can be multiple things to multiple people, and they just really want something to happen for them specifically. Except for China, who's just like, man, fuck this shit. This is like, you guys are trying to feed into like some bullshit here, and I'm not going to be for it. And I thought Zendaya was much better on second watch. I didn't think she was bad on the first. But just the way that she has to emote with her face quite a bit. And thinking about sort of the ending, about how Dune can be, it could end there. Like, if they hadn't announced Dune Messiah, I was like, oh, that's
they technically
haven't. Yeah.
It's more of, yeah, we're probably
like,
going to do it.
If the script is okay.
I guarantee you they're going to do it, but they haven't. Like, Warner Brothers hasn't technically said, we're making Dune Messiah.
Yeah. But I thought about how they would end, or how he chose to end the movie. And I was like, this is a very fascinating ending way, or a way to end just this saga of Dune on these people, on this person, you know, how this is falling or going apart. But pretty good. I kind of want to talk about it more, but I don't want to like, you know, take over 35 minutes of time here. So maybe we'll be like a special nights episode or something where I can go more into explanations of revenge, wrath, and
why you want to join the Bene Gesserit.
I don't know if I want to join the Bene Gesserit. I mean,
why you want to become a Mentat?
Well, those Harkonnens are just like fucking around in the Gladiator Stadium. That sounds kind of that's an awful place. But yeah, Dune 2. We'll discuss more about it. And I also watched this movie called The Home Alone. I don't know if you guys have heard of it.
Just in time.
Maybe.
Yeah, it's, you know, perfect for March, which, you know, a child is left home alone for Christmas and they have to not, you know, do anything weird. And yet they have two home invaders and he sets up a bunch of traps with micro machines, which I don't think are around anymore.
There's always micro machines.
Are there really?
And Hot Wheels. Yes. Kids love cars. They made three movies about it.
Micro machines were just like really tiny.
They doesn't mean they go away.
Yeah, they're like microplastics. They're there forever. Got it.
Okay. Well, I'm glad you caught up with Home Alone again. I assume
it's the first time I've ever seen it.
I assume for like a third time in 3 months.
It's a comfort watch.
I've seen a few things. One of them, not so much a comfort watch. I don't know, are any of these comfort watches? Two of them could be. The first up is the other release of the week, which is Imaginary.
The
Blumhouse film from director Jeff Wadlow, who's given us such classics as Fantasy Island and Truth or Dare. Not good is my verdict on this one. It's not like terrible. It's just bad. It like the scares are like bland. I will say the third act of this movie goes places that I didn't necessarily expect. That said, I don't think it's executed as well as it could have been, given how surprised I was by where it tries to go.
Does it get somewhere crazy?
Yeah, I mean, in the spirit of a movie about imaginary friends, yes, I would say it does go somewhere crazy, and I think a better movie would have been able to explore that more interestingly or terrifyingly. Also, not great kid actors in this movie.
Reliant upon them?
I mean, it's about a little girl and her imaginary friend, so yes, it's very much reliant on them. She has an older sister as well, you know, I don't want to poke fun at children. We leave that for Mark Hoban to do. But I'm kidding. But not great. Not the best.
Yeah.
Like I look at like Megan last year and it's like that little girl was pretty good along with Megan. I think they did the job. This one, the Blumhouse is, you know, back and forth, I guess.
Well, you know what I look forward to, Aaron?
What?
Reading the full plot spoiler synopsis.
Your Blumhouse tactic these days.
Yeah.
If I don't see it, I'll read about it.
More just horror movies in general. Yeah.
All right. So the next, speaking of comfort watches that aren't scary, I watched Academy Award winner Peter Farrelly's newest film, Ricky Stenicki.
Oh, yeah.
Prime Video. Remember, that's Academy Award winner Peter Farrelly.
Mm-hmm.
Two-time Academy Award winner. He's made the Oscars kiss. You know who can't say that? Martin Scorsese.
Oh,
wow.
Too soon.
So this is his first big, like, he made Green Book and then he had like the greatest beer run ever, whatever it was called.
Zac Efron, yeah.
And Zac Efron's back in Ricky Stenicki, where Andrew Santino and Jermaine Fowler are best friends who have created a person called Ricky Stenicki ever since childhood. They blame anything that goes wrong on this. Speaking of imaginary friend they've created. And so now they're adults and they use that as an excuse to like go off on random trips together or what have you. They'll just say like, Ricky Stenicki had cancer, so we have to go help him or something. Like they literally use this. And now they're like tasked with the idea of we have to create a real Ricky Stenicki or the jig's going to be up. And so John Cena plays this person. John Cena, who stars as like an exotic karaoke guy, like impressionist guy. It's weird. I will say this movie's not very good.
Okay.
Maybe it needed another Farrelly to like really round it out, get the brothers in there. John Cena, though, is very funny in this movie.
Glad to hear.
He continues to prove to me that he's just a really good improviser. Like that's, he's very apparent in all the ways that I don't think The Rock is a very good improviser. I think The Rock needs more direction, where John Cena just seems to know what to do here. The issue is the rest of it. The rest of this movie is not very good, including Zac Efron, who it's so funny to be like, he's great in Iron Claw. And then it's like, here's my like terrible comedy I do. I get into like Eddie Murphy and Norbit, like around.
I was just about to say, if he'd gotten nominated for Iron Claw, would this have been a Norbit thing?
It feels exactly like that.
Oh, man.
But Efron, like, it's not like Efron's bad. He's just, he's not, like, he needs guidance for his comedy. There's a reason why, like, Neighbors work and Baywatch is a giant bomb for both him and The Rock. Like, they need better people to work with them on these things to make them successful.
Sure.
So this movie, it's very, it, like, has all the Fairly touches as far as, like, there's a lot of, like, gross gags. There's a weird reach for heart. There's a celebration of mentally challenged people that they constantly bring in their films as well. Like, it has all the hallmarks of a solid Fairly Brother movie. It's just, it's not particularly good outside of the performance of Ricky Stenicki, a name that does not get old to hear.
Yeah, that's a bummer, because we talked about, you know, brothers making movies together with the Coens a couple weeks ago, or was it just last week? And 2 weeks ago. And yeah, maybe the Fairly Brothers should.
We need Bobby. Together. We need Bobby back.
Yeah.
Like, I liked Champions last year from Bobby Fairly. I like that.
That's with Harrelson.
Yeah. I thought that movie was fine. So,
yeah.
I watched Damsel. This is the Millie Bobby Brown princess stuck in a giant dragon lair movie that's now out on Netflix.
I've not heard of it.
You didn't hear about this one?
No, that's weird, because I usually hear about everything.
All right.
I've heard about it.
I feel like I haven't seen, like, previews and snippets of this for, like, a year, but it's, like, it's finally out. It's from the director of 28 Weeks Later, which had me very intrigued, because I think that movie rocks. And he hasn't made a lot of movies, so I'm like, finally, he's doing something. I will say this. It's very straightforward. It is a, like, she, Millie Bobby Brown plays, like, a woman who gets, like, a young woman who gets brought in to be the bride of a prince, and twist happens, and she gets thrown into a dragon pit. You know, one of those situations.
Yeah.
And the movie's very straightforward, as far as it feels so, like, stripped down of most things beyond she has to get out of this place and escape a dragon, that it felt like a video game I'd play. Like, that's that kind of simplicity. I was like, oh, that's neat. I think it's, even by those standards, still pretty limited. But you have a dragon here voiced by Shireen Aghadashloo, and it's a good dragon. And I like I like a good dragon. You know,
if
Shazam had a wooden dragon last year. It's like, yeah, all right, that wins me over pretty easily. So I'm not going to say Damsel's like a fantastic fantasy film, but I think it gets by on what it's going for, and it has a cool dragon, and, you know, cool dragon, it goes a long way for me.
Okay, this is a direct to Netflix.
It's direct to Netflix, yes. Okay. In the realm of, like, direct to Netflix movies, it's better than Rebel Moon. I'll put it that way.
You knew where I was going with this question.
Exactly. Yeah. It's better than Rebel Moon, which Zack Snyder claims was watched more than Barbie this past week.
90 million people times $16 per ticket. I would have made $1 billion.
Airtight logic.
I mean, in the sense that people, like, started watching it and then turned it off, sure.
His logic is airtight. He said those things on a podcast that's very reputable.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Therefore, can't be false. That's how everyone's constantly talking about Rebel Moon.
Also, Batman's always been killing people. I don't know why they want to protect their savior.
Meanwhile, we're here like, I guess we'll watch The Scar Giver in April. Let's see what happens.
I mean, I still haven't seen Rebel Moon, so
neither have I.
I can't really say much.
I'm waiting for the full 4-hour cut to be released.
Isn't it 6 hours?
Is it six?
Well, when both parts are out, it'll be 6 hours total.
Oh,
yes.
My gosh.
Jesus Christ.
That said, ideally, you watch the first part, then there's a trailer, but or something else. And then you watch the second part.
It's a trailer for Sucker Punch, but it's been renamed Zack Snyder's Barbie.
Hilarious. Alexander, stop giving free ideas out.
That makes me laugh.
I mean, Sucker Punch already exists, so I don't have to.
It does, but he's gonna rebrand it, and it's gonna make, like, you know, at least like $1 million.
It's funny. Two more things. I watched Wicked Little Letters.
Okay.
This has Olivia Colman and Jesse Buckley.
Oh, this one.
Yeah, it's based on kind of a true story where, like, there's a woman in town played by Jesse Buckley who's very it's very loud and brazen and swears a lot and what have you, and she's known around town for that. Olivia Colman plays, like, the respectable churchwoman who
This movie.
Yeah, she's getting a lot of letters in the mail that are very obscene. Mm-hmm. And so she accuses Jesse Buckley. And there's, like, a libel charge, and it's a big deal. This is set in, like, the early 20th, or no, it's like 19th century, like late 19th century. And so it becomes this kind of, it's like a whodunit of sorts, except involving libel charges and letters and uncouth behavior from women. And there's, it's very much a movie like about women. Like there's a female police officer in there as well, who like has to deal with the fact that she's referred to as woman police officer. Like there's things like that going on that really like get into different like ideas of like what society was like at certain times. And it's quite funny. It's like, it's played as a comedy as far as like the way the, you hear these letters and how obscene they are and all these like double standards involving men and women at that time. And you know, you have Olivia Colman and Jesse Buckley, two very good actors, that are just really great in this. Like it's a lot of, it's a fun movie. It's a good watch. For
sure. Are they using their real accents?
Yes, very much so, because Jesse Buckley's so, like, she's so Scottish.
It's hard to hear her.
But like, you know, it's the kind of where like you, like the whole mouth is like involved to like pronounce things.
Excellent. Yeah, I'm glad.
Sorry, I said Scottish. Irish. She's very Irish.
I was thinking about correcting, but I wasn't sure.
Yeah. I was like,
thank you for looking it up.
Yeah. As I was saying, I was like, this doesn't sound right. So yeah.
we would have definitely gotten letters from Ireland.
The letters, yeah, exactly. Yeah. From all the people that celebrate us because we're such fans of Brooklyn on this podcast. Be like, well, you betrayed us.
I mean, yeah, of course. Yeah. You betrayed us.
Yeah. The last film I saw that I'll mention is Accidental Texan. A movie that I have no business really talking about because it's such a small movie, but it's charming, and so I want to talk about it. It stars Thomas Hayden Church, who also produces, as an oil man in Texas, as you might have guessed. There's a kid who, like, he's an actor. He goes to Louisiana to be, like, an actor. He, like, messes up big time. He's driving back home. His car breaks down in Texas, and he meets Thomas Hayden Church. And he's like running on hard times, and he's trying to like keep the debt collectors off his back. And so he has like he's befriended this kid. He's like, you got to pretend to be like a guy that knows oil and is like really like knows where to like look and everything to get us to stay in business. And so they have this like friendship, and they like the kid like fakes his way into like convincing people that he knows what he's talking about. It's a very like folksy movie that I randomly got invited to see a screener of. It's like, okay, I like Thomas Hayden Church. And you know what? Like I said, it's charming. It's like very hokey in spots. You have Carrie Ann Moss is like a local diner owner who like has a relationship with Thomas Hayden Church also. Like there's and like Bruce Dern's in here is an old oil man. Like there's a lot of just like random stars.
Wow.
Yeah. But it's the kind of thing where like if I found this on like Prime or Canopy, I'd be like, this sounds intriguing. And I'd watch it and I'd be like, this is charming. So that's what I got. I think this movie has this odd charm to it.
Do you think like if an Instagram influencer watched this movie and made a post about Carrie Ann Moss? And who had in this Instagram influencer had very famous friends that Carrie Ann Moss would be nominated for Best Actress?
I don't know if I'd go that far, but I hear what you're saying. And I would say there'd certainly be like a remember Carrie Ann Moss type of posts. And like there'd be like a sudden like reemergence of her because like, yeah, The Matrix, but she's a reliable actress. And they play all these clips on TikTok or whatever the hell.
I'm pretty sure she's just counting her money. You know, she's got tons.
Yeah. I'm sure she's comfortable.
No, but like the way that you're describing the plot, I was like, this sounds like, you know, a small town plot. And then it's got some of that vibe that we were talking about from last season.
It's got it has like if you see like Doc Hollywood, Michael J. Fox.
Yeah, Michael J. Fox. Yeah.
It has that kind of a tone to it that I think works. Where everyone's just like everyone knows each other and there's like a friendliness to it and there's like antagonists to a point, but not really.
Yeah,
like it's nice.
And I guess a more recent reference is Lars and the Real Girl. If you guys aren't know, listeners aren't watching Doc Hollywood.
I mean, I'd say Cars, which is just Doc Hollywood of Cars.
That's true, too.
my go-to. But yes, Lars and the Real Girl, also not a bad reference.
Small town, you know, everybody
also, I think those movies are like the same age. Like Cars is 2007. What's Lars and the Real Girl? I think that's also
I want to say like 2008.
2007. They're
really good. Wow, there you go.
Cars is 6. So I got a year before, but still. Yeah. Okay.
Well, great.
That's not a
trademark.
Let's move on now. Let's get to our trailer talk. We're talking about one of the newest movie trailers of the week, when it's coming out, what we thought of it, what have you. This week we're talking The Wild Robot. This is an upcoming animated film from DreamWorks, speaking of. It features Lupita Nyong'o. This epic, I'll read this description I see here. This epic adventure follows the journey of a robot, Rosum Unit 7134, Roz for short, that is shipwrecked on an uninhabited island and must learn to adapt to the harsh surroundings, gradually building relationships with the animals on the island and becoming the adoptive parent of an orphaned gosling. Speaking of Lars, the real girl.
what? So we wrote this out.
I wish it was that bad.
Yeah.
This film is directed by Chris Sanders, who has made a number of other DreamWorks films, but How to Train Your Dragon and The Croods, How to Train Your Dragon, co-directed with Dean DuBois. And Lilo and Stitch, actually, too, from Disney. And this is his first solo animated film, because he directed Call of the Wild, of course, in live action.
Mm-hmm.
A film that we definitely saw.
It's got its charm.
It's got its moments.
Yeah.
Alexander, are you excited for the wild yes. robot based on this trailer?
I actually am. I didn't see it the trailer when it came out online. I waited until I saw Kung Fu Panda, and I love how they're going with this, like, more this art style that they utilized for the bad guys and Puss in Boots: The Last Wish. I definitely got a lot of vibes reminding me of WALL-E, which, I mean, since Lupita Nyong'o is going to be voicing Roz, that's probably not going to be the case, in the sense that it might have a lot of dialogue as opposed to WALL-E in its first half, but it looks really good. Knowing that Chris Sanders co-directed How to Train Your Dragon, this could be right up there in terms of like a more earnest approach and being as mature as the How to Train Your Dragon series when you compare them to other DreamWorks properties.
Sure. Abe, how about you?
I had not seen the trailer beforehand. Sometimes I'll watch them whenever they come out, and I'll watch them on my computer or something like that. I had heard peeps about this on the Twitter sphere. I'm still calling it that because that's what it is. And people were like, oh, you know, this person is a very giving person. This director is a very giving person. And the story is very at this person's core. And so I was watching Kung Fu Panda 4 and this trailer came on. I was like, oh, this must be the trailer for The Wild Robot. And by the end of it, I think I was tearing up because I was emotionally moved by what I was seeing on the screen, kind of like what I'm thinking the concept of the film was going to be, but more specifically around like this migration that is happening at the end of this trailer. And it's clear that, you know, if you're connecting some scenes from earlier in the trailer together, you're just like, oh, I see what this might be. And I'm very looking forward to this. Aaron named all of these movies that have a better, score in my book with regard to how they're setting up a animated film. And I am very looking forward to this. So hopefully it delivers on what I'm hoping that it delivers on.
Yeah, I don't disagree with any of you guys here. I think it looks like it has a lot of potential. I think DreamWorks, I guess we could talk about this when we get to Kung Fu Panda more, but like DreamWorks, you know, they can go kind of back and forth with how big they want to go with either emphasizing the like loopy comedy aspects of things or with the more serious side of things. And yeah, you have your How to Train Your Dragons among other properties in their book. And I like that this is, you know, more scaled down and focused seemingly on the kind of adventure survival aspect. And yeah, combined with the animation progressiveness that they've gone for ever since, you know, Spider-Verse came out and was like, you know what, we should try that too. And they've, you know, done some interesting things in an animation level. I'm looking forward to this as far as, hey, this seems like something different for, you know, a studio that doesn't always take those kinds of risks necessarily. So cool. The Wild Robot opens in theaters September 20th, 2024. So curious date, you know, in between summer and the bigger award season here. See what happens. All right. Well, let's get to it. Let's get to our main review for Kung Fu Panda 4.
It is time to take the next step on your journey.
I'm not going to be the dragon warrior anymore.
You will advance to spiritual leader of the Valley of Peace.
Inner peace. Inner peace.
Keep your surf off my turf.
Dinner, please.
dinner with peas in a sesame soy glaze.
This is not working at all.
Tai Lung, big fan.
Once I possess the kung fu of every master villain, no one will dare question my power.
Not even the great dragon warrior.
Who's that?
The most powerful shape-shifting sorceress, the chameleon.
How do I find this, the chameleon?
That should have shown the trailer for Kung Fu Panda 4. So, fun fact, back in 2011 when Kung Fu Panda 2 came out, that was the first time, Abe, we had a guest on our show. That'll be, of course, friend of the show, Jordan Grout. Over a decade later, and here we are with Kung Fu Panda 4, a new adventure for Poe the Dragon Warrior, voiced by Jack Black, and potentially the start of a new Kung Fu Panda trilogy of stories. But before we get ahead of ourselves, this film finds Poe being tasked by Master Shifu to choose a successor for when his time as a Dragon Warrior comes to an end. Meanwhile, a tricky new foe known as the Chameleon is stealing skills of warriors alive and beyond to become all-powerful. To stop her, Poe will have to team up with a thief to track down this villain, developing some new understandings along the way. Alexander, I want to know, what is your, like, your fandom for Kung Fu Panda in general, and what did you think of this film?
So I didn't actually see the first movie in theaters, but at the time it came out, I was sort of in a state of mind where I didn't watch animated movies because I just thought they were kid stuff. I was 17 at the time, until I saw WALL-E and just realized, oh, yeah, I should pull my head out of my ass when it comes to these kinds of movies.
Kung Fu Panda, and then a month later when WALL-E came out, you're like, you know what?
pretty much.
Give this thing a shot.
Pretty much.
It's great.
Yeah, so I ended up seeing Kung Fu Panda when it came out on DVD and was so mad that I missed it in theaters because it was really good. I think it's still my favorite, but I think 2 is a close second in terms of my favorite of these movies. Three was actually the first one I saw in theaters. I don't remember why I skipped out on 2. I think because I just wasn't seeing everything in theaters at that time. But I enjoyed 3. So I'd say, like, this series is one of their most consistent in terms of, like, the level of quality, the fact that these are essentially, like, authentic martial arts movies, but with talking animals, in the same way that The Incredibles is a legit superhero movie, but animated. And I'd say that this new one is my least favorite of the four. But it certainly keeps up everything that you come to expect from these movies. And I actually like what they do with Poe's story. So the only thing I'd say that didn't work for this movie, and that's like a very small criticism, is that when you get to the fourth movie, it starts to feel a little too predictable. Like, you can see plot points a mile away, even if there's certain twists that happen. You know what's going to happen later on. I just didn't think it was it's still really good. I just didn't feel it to be as creative or as fresh as the previous ones.
Abe, remind us where you are with the Kung Fu Panda films, and what'd you think of this?
Alexander, very akin to your story there. I also did not watch Kung Fu Panda in 2008 in theaters. I've said it on the show before. I famously watched Horton Hears a Who instead. Because I was like, I think this is going to be a better movie. And then I watched Kung Fu Panda later on DVD, and I was like, I am a fucking fool.
So, how does that work? You had your list of, like, DreamWorks animation. It's like, I only get one a year, and this is my choice.
No, I want to go see...
It's a Blue Sky movie, right? So you're like, oh, I only get so
let's
many
go, let's go see the family-friendly one. what the fuck is a... What the fuck is a panda that can do
kung fu? I know what a who is.
And clearly a Dr. Seuss movie.
Exactly.
That's been nothing but greatness coming from those Dr. Seuss films.
Right. No, I went to go see that with a few friends, and I was like, okay, well, I think the friendlier approach here would be Horton Hears a Who. And again, when they start fighting in Kung Fu Panda, even the first fight with Tai Lung, when he's fighting Master Shifu, I was like, I am such a fucking moron. So Kung Fu Panda is... pretty fun. The first one is pretty great. Second one, pretty funny in what it's doing and also how it expands on the story. I like that these are all interconnected-ish in some way as well. I can't really remember like the third one. I know the main plot of it, but I think similar to Alexander, it kind of has like diminishing returns as it keeps going here. So Kung Fu Panda 4, I was like, I'm not really sure what to expect here. I kind of didn't know that this was actually going to be released this early. I thought it was might maybe be like a fall release or something. So I don't think I liked it as much for sure. It feels very much like this entire franchise has kind of gone on to do TV series and shows. This feels very episodic and kind of like that. Yes, the animation is there. Yes, it's very funny at times. And yes, it's kind of, I guess, you know, charming at times too. But it certainly didn't feel like a movie that was, that kind of had a larger, grander scope of trying to do a feature-length film versus a TV episode. And that is unfortunate because they also dismiss The Furious Five pretty quickly. They're all doing their own adventure, and this is not a spoiler. And then they introduce to you a new character, and by the end of it, you're like, I guess that this person has some skills here. But also, I've seen this story done maybe differently and better in other ways, too, both animated and also live action. So it's unfortunate because I don't know what I was going in and maybe expecting. Not a whole lot, but I think that I left kind of thinking, I think it could have been better. So unfortunate for Kung Fu Panda 4.
I'm a fan of the Kung Fu Panda series. I think the mm-hmm. first two are about equal and great. I rewatched all of them before I saw this one, and I rewatched all of them on the same night because they're not long. Wow. Yeah. And, well, I started one at like 5 because I'm like, I can watch two of these. So I watched mm-hmm. one at 5, and then it's like, and then it had dinner, and I was like, okay, I'll watch the second one. And then I was like, well, I could watch a 2-hour movie and then go to sleep, or I could watch the third one and have another half hour to play video games. And so I chose the third one because I'm like, well, I do like my games. So I watched it because it's also 90 minutes. So I ended up watching all 3 Kung Fu Pandas in one evening. And boy, that's fun. That's a fun time to spend nice. Watching Kung Fu Panda movies. I will say the third one, yes, it's a come down from the first two. And I think the fourth one, it's not that I think I like it more than you guys. I think I like it about the same as the third one.
Okay.
And I'll say why. It's because I think the Poe story in 4, I think, is stronger overall than the Poe story in 3. I think that's an arc that makes sense for me as far as he's gone through, you know, a life being, you know, going from one thing to a dragon warrior to now it's like, no, I got to move on.
Right.
And so that to me is interesting thematically. And that is something I think the Kung Fu Panda films do well. They find ways to not only deliver cool action and comedy and stuff, but they give you, you know, a level of heart. The problem is that the first two are so well done as far as that heart aspect goes, that right. emotionality, that 3 and 4 just pale in comparison. Yeah. They do feel like, Abe, as you've said, more in line with the various TV shows that it and pretty much every other DreamWorks film have. Cool on DreamWorks that they can expand all of their properties into various TV shows, but mm-hmm. you know, that it also makes you feel a bit more familiar. That said, it's not like I watched all these TV shows. I don't have time to watch all these Kung Fu Panda shows, which there's like 3 of them at least. So it's, you know, it's not like I've been seeing Poe all the time for the past, you know, years since 4 or 3 came out.
Mm-hmm.
But it does give me that vibe of, hey, here's the chameleon, the new villain. And it feels very villain of the week to me, which is a shame because I think Viola Davis is having fun voicing it.
And cool character.
And it's a cool character. Yeah, it's a cool design or whatnot. Mm-hmm. And we can talk more about the animation and what have you as we go on here. But I do, overall, the main thing that I really like about this that extends to the other films is Jack Black is so all in on all mm-hmm. of these. And here, it's no different. It's not like Poe seems slower or the energy's not quite there. I think Jack Black is such a gift to these movies and things in general because he puts everything into it. He goes all in. He has a lot of fun doing it. And I feel like you can really hear that enthusiasm throughout. And I think that's what makes Poe such an endearing character. He's, you know, he's a panda. It is a character that is, you know, larger, and you have certain expectations for what that can mean as far as his martial arts prowess. Mm-hmm. But the movies, or at least the way Poe is portrayed in all of these movies, and this one included, like, it never looks down upon him. Like, it finds ways to challenge him and make him have to step up. And he might be goofy, it might be, I don't know, clumsy, but he's never doofy, you know. He's never it, and it's never like putting him down or making you feel certain ways that are lesser than. It's never talking down to Poe.
Yeah, he's very much so. In what he's doing.
And that continues here in ways again that I think are beneficial because he has to like find somebody else that can now do the thing he's doing. So like that goes a long way for me in the realm of like how to make animated characters like keep having a certain draw to them. And I think Poe, you know, even as they find new things for him to do, I still think like what Jack Black brings to that role, I think is really, really special. Honestly.
Yeah. Yeah, certainly all in for sure. I think the other thing that I really liked about this is the musical score. It's composed by Hans Zimmer and I forget the other person's name.
Steve Mazzaro.
And
which probably means Steve Mazzaro did most of the work at Hans Zimmer.
Exactly.
On Sundays.
So. Yeah, exactly. So that's why it's like, you know, Dune 2, great score, but also like he's got a whole academy that's helping him out. The fight sequence is very reminiscent, like what Alexander, you were saying, of a traditional martial arts movie. You know, it's got a fast pace to it. And they certainly use a lot of elements of like drums or percussion instruments. And so
did you find that the case here? Like specifically?
Yeah, especially like the large city sequence. I was like, this is really good musical score. It reminded me a lot of at times something that you might have seen in either Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon or in Kung Fu Hustle. And I was like, yeah, this is actually really fun, pretty like unbeat. I was actually curious who did the score because I was thinking to myself, I wonder if there's an Asian person that did this. But yeah,
I asked that because I think the action's great. It's consistently great in these movies. I do think it feels more wuxia and anime influenced than the previous film.
Interesting. Okay.
That's like it felt that, like, especially on the anime front, just because the animation. It's more like split screens and attempts to do some stylized stuff, which is not new for Kung Fu. Like they've always had like different animation styles to like tell backstory and stuff like that. But it seemed like there was some, like there's like what, like he fights like a manta ray towards the beginning where there's some stuff there that this feels very like not only the martial arts aspect, but it has like anime qualities to it as well, which is.
I feel like they certainly learned a lot from Puss in Boots: The Last Wish and just kind of decided to fall into the anime realm, like, hey, we can actually do stuff like this and just have fun with it.
I want to ask you guys about the villain here.
Sure.
And you kind of touched upon an Aaron with I think Viola Davis is also doing a really fun performance and she's also all in. But you just watched all three of them previously.
Yeah.
I forget the third villain, if there is one.
It's J.K. Simmons as a giant, like a water buffalo, I believe.
Okay.
And he has like chains and he sucks the chi out of people.
Okay.
He returned from the spirit realm and had a grudge against Master Shifu. Or who did he have a grudge against? He had a grudge against somebody. But
one of them. Yeah.
You know, he had a grudge against what's his name, who died in the first movie.
Tai Lung?
No.
Master Oogway.
Oogway. Yeah.
The tortoise. Look at us knowing our Kung Fu Panda universe.
You should hear us on the Walking Dead show. We forget all kinds of stuff all the time. But we're still the best Walking Dead podcast. So.
There you go. But question for you guys on just that villain, Alexander. I'd actually love to hear your thoughts because Aaron and I think we kind of expressed ours. But yeah, curious your thoughts on that villain, kind of how it fits into these movies, and did it feel episodic or did you just really love it?
It felt very much episodic because I think the idea of this character just shape-shifting and turning into people hiding in plain sight is really cool, but they don't really take advantage of that until
a little bit, but I mean, I don't think we need to give away the game.
No, I'll just, okay, without spoiling anything, they don't really take advantage of that ability until the very end of the movie. Yeah. And I felt like this character would have been a stronger presence had she basically shape-shifted throughout the entire movie. So at every corner, you weren't sure who's like actually this person or who the chameleon actually, or if this is the chameleon.
I agree with you. And I wonder, not that, you know, you have to map these things out so far in advance as far as how the stories are going to go or whatnot, but as far as how much and like what you're capable of with the shape-shifting, I will note, this movie's budget is $85 million.
Okay.
The previous film And it was 145 million because animated films tend to be expensive. Two and one, I think, they're both like 150 million. So like what I'm saying is this movie has almost half the budget as the previous film.
Mm-hmm.
And if you didn't notice, not having, you know, major movie stars, Angelina Jolie, Seth Rogen, right. Lucy Liu, and what have you for the
future. Jackie
Chan. I mean, that saves a lot of money right there, along with, you know, like Gary Oldman from Kung Fu Bandit 2. Mm-hmm. You only, of all the villains, you only have Ian McShane, which is great. I'm happy to have Ian McShane back. But mm-hmm. I wonder, were you to have, you know, the other 50 million or so to work with, would there have been an opportunity for the chameleon to really like delve into that more? Like, would they have been able to like get that? Not that you need the voices to make that necessarily work, but do you, mm-hmm. you hear what I'm saying? I wonder if like there's more possibilities because they had more to work with on that front.
Yeah, absolutely. I didn't know that the budget was like slashed in half. Obviously, like animation itself has kind of some sort of a cap, but maybe in mind it's like a few things here and there.
When the five didn't appear, when I got home, I was like, I immediately looked up what the budget was, and like there has to be some reason why you can't get all. It's like, oh yeah, because you can't afford all of these movie stars to be in this movie.
Totally. Yeah, I think my logic went a different route of just, oh, I think that this is because they just weren't interested in making a fourth one. Alexander, you're going to say something?
I was going to say, like, I felt like had the Furious Five been there, but as Chameleon's disguise, that could have worked. Which I originally thought there's really no place for the Furious Five to be in this movie. Yeah. But you bring up that point where if they just popped up as Chameleon's mm-hmm. disguise, that I think could have worked out. But a little better.
The fact that we're saying there's no place for them in this movie, that's why it seems episodic, right? Because it's like the threat they're going up against doesn't require the best martial artists in the world to take care of it. It just requires like Poe on a weekend to be like, all right, let's take care of this.
Right.
So it's like, like I said, I think Viola Davis is good here, but it's not like the threat she presents seems to be all that big of a deal to make there's a stronger movie here if the chameleon feels like a, you know, a more nefarious person to deal with.
Sure. Yeah, I would agree. I mean, it also kind of deus ex machina is it by giving him like the staff, right? The staff is like just much more powerful perhaps than the Furious Five. Actually, speaking of, I guess this Furious Five thing, they do show up later, but because
diminished capacity, sure.
Yeah, in a very diminished and just montage capacity and with the credits running. But because they are sort of set aside, there is a new character here, voiced by Awkwafina, which is the Fox. Curious your thoughts on Awkwafina. She's having like an amazing like 10-year career here. I don't think it's been 10 years, but I think it's been like 5 years since Crazy Rich Asians. But it's been curious what you guys are thinking about for this new introduction of this new character, who might be more pivotal in future installments.
In the realm of Awkwafina does voices in movies, which I think is perfectly fine because she has a distinctive voice, which mm-hmm. is, you know, and she's, you know, good at it as far as just voicing stuff. This is one of, I think, the better uses of her, I think, because there's a more rounded out character here as opposed to just like, you know, person that screams things.
Scuttlebutt?
Hey, Scuttlebutt Innocent. I would have nominated that over at least one song.
From last year.
The original song lineup. Sorry, Diane Foran, but the scuttlebutt's got to go stay.
Wow.
No, I think the character works. I like that there's a, you know, it's a character that to oppose Poe is such a black and white, like good versus evil type character. So you have this mm-hmm. character who's like, I'm, you know, a homeless thief. Like I have to deal with stuff. That I think that's an interesting like way to balance between the two of them. And like Alex, you mentioned, there's a very obvious plot that's taking place involving these characters. And so it's not like there's a lot of surprise with Zen. But I appreciate like with the voice work going into it.
Okay.
Yeah, I actually did like her in this, but I guess Universal, not just DreamWorks, but Universal has her on speed dial. Because Migration, Renfield, and the bad guys. This was probably her most, I guess, restrained, like,
oh, interesting. Yeah, I didn't think of it that way, but yeah.
Because my first exposure to Awkwafina was mm-hmm. Ocean's 8, where she definitely had a certain style, certain acting style that got old mm-hmm. really fast. So I thought her in this movie, she was like definitely more mm-hmm. grounded, and you couldn't really. I mean, it's hard to miss her voice, but I felt like they did a good job making her just sort of, I don't know, average, but the character itself, I could see the plot, like, there's only a certain way they could go with this character, but the movie has something, I don't want to say it's a twist, because you could kind of see what mm-hmm. happens afterwards. I felt like it would have been more interesting had they found a way to commit to this twist rather than sure, doing the very predictable thing. But as a character, I thought she fit well. I really mm-hmm. like yeah. her design, and her voice just seems to
yeah. fit with I really like the design too. And she's like a snow fox. And so there are times where have you guys ever seen like a snow fox hunt?
I mean, only every weekend. No, I've not seen.
But they literally do just jump up and then like nosedive into like the snow to try and get their prey. And at one point, she was doing that with like some of the money stuff at the tavern part. And yeah, I was like, this okay. is actually really fun that they're actually incorporating again the animal elements of the characters
sure.
into the characters, which we've seen before in other animated films as well. Which like Turning Red is a great example of one where Mei Mei might like. Throw up her hands because the red panda throws up their hands when they're scared. But yeah, I really like that character design. Alexander, you brought up a great point, which I didn't think about, which is like she is more subdued in here. Maybe that's why it was like less irritating on the ears. Not to say that she's annoying, more just that, yes, she does have a quite a distinct vocal presence. And sometimes she can go full out. But this one was
it's more the farewell than Ocean's 8.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, yeah. Good point. Yeah.
Yeah.
As far as voice actors go, I was. Because I didn't know he was in this, so it's like, okay, Hu Kwan's in this too. Like, it's just so fun to hear, like,
what a surprise!
Because he, you know, I know what he sounds like. It's like, yeah. Oh, that's fun. I didn't see that coming at all. Yeah. And that's like at the end, like Ronnie Chang is in here too. Like, there's a lot of like just perform big people in here. I was like, this is fun. Like,
yeah, definitely not, fun on the side cast.
Like not knowing this going in, I just like, oh, this is neat. And right. then like Ian McShane's in here a lot more than I expected, which is super fun. Cause I think Tai Lung is such a fun and like menacing character in that first mm-hmm. film. And like seeing him be like kind of on the side, just like delivering like John Wick style quips. Like it's like, this is great. Like I'm all about this.
I'm glad he's found a life after Deadwood.
I will say like James Hong and Bryan Cranston, who are Poe's fathers at this point,
have a pretty meaty arc in this movie.
I mean, they're in the movie, and yes, but 3 resolves anything about them that matters, like as far as like any emotional arc. Now they're just here as like, because we don't have the Furious Five, we need like sidekicks.
Yeah, exactly. Poe.
And like they're not bad. It's just like, all right. Like
and also we gotta keep showing that James Hong can still be as young as exactly.
His voice. 92-year-old James, 95-year-old
95.
James Hong,
Meanwhile, Dustin Hoffman's like, I'm going to try to make this as older as I can.
I know, right? I was like, what happened to Dustin Hoffman's voice?
I think that, they certainly, like, with the voices they have, they certainly give them stuff to do, which I appreciated.
Yeah, I agree.
You talked about some of the action. I just wanted to mention, I think that bar set piece that they're in, where it's like a bar that's like on a cliff, basically. Mm-hmm. I think that's awesome. I thought that was like the most fun I had watching like the action in this movie. I really enjoyed
both it. Times or one time specifically.
No, like the one, like the main one where it's like literally tilting on edge. Like I thought that was just really fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, good fun set pieces. I also like the design of the larger city. I also appreciated that they were able to kind of make it feel more hustling and bustling. I also like that there's jokes all throughout this in terms of the script where they're kind of like doing tongue in cheek. But in general, I just like that similar to in Kung Fu Panda 2 somebody is shouting from like, you know, a mile away and Poe's like, I can't really hear you because, you know, this isn't how real life works. I also liked how in this city, this giant city here, nobody knows who the Dragon Warrior is because it doesn't matter to them. You know, they're like miles away, hundreds of miles away from the Valley of Peace or.
Yeah.
But it's clever that they are incorporating these things in here.
But there's also just so many visual sight gags that happen in the background.
I didn't even think about that. Yeah,
that caught me off guard. Even in the foreground, there was one joke that got me so hard that I ended up coughing.
Did it involve smashing a fruit of some kind? Oh, okay.
No, it was like the most obvious joke, but it worked for me. It was when they're in the
Is it the bull in the china shop yet?
Yes.
Oh, that yeah, one.
Exactly. Like it's like the most obvious thing in the world.
It's great.
And yet
it's
that got
great,
me.
It's a great bit. For sure that I very much enjoyed. And it is the kind of movie where I look forward to seeing it eventually again, just because there is just a lot of stuff going on that I'd be happy to like observe more.
Yeah.
When it hits, I don't know, Peacock.
Is that where DreamWorks goes?
Yeah, Universal, yeah.
It's Peacock for like a bit for 4 months, and then it goes to Netflix and then back to Peacock.
Let's see what else. Oh, well, the question I was going to ask is I mentioned earlier that like DreamWorks, their idea is, you know, well, we could make another three movies from here. Like, you know, make this one and then two more. Are you up for seeing more adventures of Poe?
I always am, but at the same time, if it's going to be more, you know, shifting from Poe's POV into other people's POV, I think that probably is not where I'm interested. Not that it can't be a good film, because we've certainly seen movies that kind of take this approach, especially like in DreamWorks. You know, I think that they've done an excellent job with How to Train Your Dragon, where they have shifted the points of view of that film. It's still on like Toothless and I forget the guy's name, Hiccup. Quite a bit, but they do give more, again, arcs to some of the people.
They've evolved the characters, but they are
100%.
They're very much, they're still focused on the on the key characters. I hear what you're saying. And
I'd be curious, but I wouldn't knock it until I tried it.
Alexander would be down for more Poe.
I definitely would. I feel like I would prefer to see future movies with that more artistic style that they had with Puss in Boots. Because seeing this, I ended up liking it at the end of the day, but it wasn't that, wow, this is incredible.
It wasn't as visually
expansive. Like it was, like I felt with The Last Wish.
The Last Wish really is like just a whole makeover as far as that went in this one.
Yeah, it was so much better than anyone.
I'd argue that Kung Fu Panda, because it's the fourth one, it's like, why should we trade up what we've been doing? But at the same time, it's like, well, that's the opportunity to trade up what you've been doing, I suppose. And especially if a martial arts film, it kind of lends itself very much to that kind, you know, doing shakeups of that capacity. So, but also again, the budget was slashed. I don't know why necessarily, beyond just cost saving measures, because, you know, why not? But I'd be curious, like, this movie opened to $58 million, which is, you know,
not
very
bad.
Strong. It's very good.
That's actually more than I thought it was, because my theater was sparsely populated, but
People wanted to see Poe. So like that, you know, we'll see how it legs out, but I don't think it's, you know, not gonna do, it'll easily make back its budget because they slashed the budget. So there's that right there.
Yeah.
And I'll be curious if that means the next one we can either do the same thing again and get away with it, not to phrase it in a bad way, but just, you know, we can get away with doing something like that. Or if they increase it because, like, hey, people still want this. Maybe this was testing grounds for if people were still interested, and now they have proof that it is, and they'd go that way. So I don't know, but I mean, I'd certainly, yes, I'd be, again, I think if Jack Black is still this committed, I'm happy to see him continue to be this committed. That's where I'm at with this. Anything else on a Kung Fu Panda 4?
No, I think we hit all of it.
All right.
Yeah, it's good. It's really good. Just not one of, I don't think it's the best of the series.
Yeah, fair enough.
Okay.
Well, when should people go and see this movie, Alexander? When should people see Kung Fu Panda 4?
I'd say it's still worth seeing in a theater, even though I feel like it's the weakest. It's still visually impressive enough to where it's worth seeing in a theater. And if you like the first three movies, you'll still like this one.
Abe?
For me, this is streaming, so check it out on streaming when you have a chance.
I'm with Alexander. I think if you're a fan of Kung Fu Panda, I think this delivers.
Well, I guess I'll just show myself out then.
Yeah, get the fuck out of here. I think this is fun. I think when I got the invite to see this, I was like, yeah, let's do this. Kung Fu Panda. And I was happy to, you know, be entertained and, you know, happy throughout. All right. Well, that's our talk on Kung Fu Panda 4. Let's, what time is it over here?
It's time for a quick game. Little known fact, that's actually the music that plays whenever you enter Poe's dad's noodle shop, but they don't have a door, so Aaron couldn't get that sold.
That's the reason.
I have a game for you guys this week. It's movie taglines, no sub name, because a theme might emerge. So this is where I will name a movie tagline. I will give additional clues as I hear more silence from you guys. And if you know the tagline, buzz in with your name and tell me the name of the movie.
Oh, man. Finally kicking me back with the taglines here.
Here we go. First one here. No plan, no backup, no choice. This is the only tagline, so I'll have to give you guys additional clues.
No plan, no backup, no choice. No plan, no backup, no choice. If I say it a third time, I might get it.
Maybe you might get it, yeah.
And I whisper it too.
Exactly. This is a 2011 film featuring a cast that...
Aaron. 2011. It's not Hangover 2, is it?
It is not the Hangover 2.
Okay.
Good try.
Oh, Alexander. I think I know what it is. Alexander. Is it Mission
that
Impossible?
That is correct.
Ghost Protocol?
Mission Impossible Ghost Protocol is the one.
Can't believe it took me that long to realize that.
When East meets West, the champion remains standing. When
could we get the year?
The year is 1985.
Aaron. Karate Kid 2?
That is incorrect.
Oh, wait. Okay.
When East meets West, the champion remains standing.
Alexander, I'm just going to pull this answer out of my ass
and
say Rocky 4.
That is correct. Rocky 4. Yeah.
Really?
Okay.
Wow.
Got it.
The next one here. Dark and difficult times lie ahead. Alexander.
Is this... I recognize the theme. Is this Harry
this
Potter
is
and
correct.
The Goblet of Fire?
Yeah. Good on you, Alexander. You might be onto something here. The next one here. In the heart of the jungle, blood will flow. The heart of the jungle, blood will flow. I'm just going to keep going with the additional taglines here. He's back with the vengeance. The fight continues.
Aaron. Wait, what is it? What's it called? John Rambo?
Close enough. It's Rambo. Yeah.
It's just Rambo. Okay.
It's just Rambo. Yeah. It's like the jungle part. It's like, it's just, he's killing fools in the jungle for no real reason.
I was trying to remember because it's like, it's Rocky Balboa. So I'm like,
yeah, exactly. Yeah.
John Rambo.
Rambo's correct. Yeah.
Okay. Just,
heroes never die. They just reload. That could go for a lot of things.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
Just reload.
The next one here. The key to saving the future can only be found in the past. The key to saving the future can only be found in the past.
Oh, could we get a year?
I can give you a year, but I'm going to give you another tagline first.
Okay.
Which is, okay. How on earth can they save the future?
Well, thanks for that. Right. Now I know.
The film year is 1986. I'm just gonna keep going with taglines here.
I forget these fucking names of these movies.
You
said 86.
Hold on. Let me think of this.
Alexander's gunning for you, Aaron.
Is this
Alexander?
Alexander. Is this Star Trek
Aaron,
4?
I need a full title.
Star Trek 4.
That's correct.
Home?
Star Trek 4, The Voyage Home.
All right.
Other taglines are the crew of the Starship Enterprise is coming home.
Ah.
Okay, the next one here. when with four, you get Kung Fu.
What? What?
With four, you get Kung Fu. Obviously, the theme is the fourth film in movies. So basically, with, you know, the number four, you get Kung Fu. The fourth one, you get Kung Fu. I'm gonna keep going here. The gang's all here.
Aaron. Lethal Weapon 4.
That's correct. Yeah. Lethal Weapon 4.
The gang's all here is the one that's on the poster. And it has, like, you know, the whole cast and Jet Li and Chris Rock. Like, the gang's all here. It's like, that's a good tagline.
Yeah. I also like this other one. Next Summer is Lethal. It's not bad.
I mean, yeah. That's any Lethal Weapon movie.
Yeah.
But my favorite line from the movie is from the trailer where they just have Jet Li saying, in Hong Kong, you would already be dead. Mm-hmm.
Your favorite line for the trailer is not Chris Rock saying, and me, Mel Gibson.
So I really briefly, how many more are there? Because I know there's a tagline from a fourth movie that has to pop up somewhere.
I don't know. I mean, there's only a few more.
Okay.
But I'd be curious to hear what you've got there at the end. Here. There was never just one.
God, I know that too. What is that?
This is the only tagline available. There was never just one.
Never just one. That I so have heard that. What is that?
You're going to be so mad.
Well, let's get in.
This is Alexander. A 2000. And, Alexander.
Oh, that never. You said 2000, so I'm never.
Oh,
mind.
No. I didn't finish my sentence, though.
Okay, go ahead.
Are you? Oh, no, please have the floor.
All right. I mean, this is the wrong answer, but Alien Resurrection.
Yeah, it's
that is incorrect. Yeah. It's a 2012 film.
Why'd you say 2007?
No, I didn't. I didn't finish my sentence. I said it's a 2000, and then I stopped.
Oh.
But Alexander, if you think that you know it again, let me know.
What's the tagline again?
There was never just one.
2012?
Oh, I know this one. Alexander.
Alexander.
Is it The Bourne Legacy?
The Bourne Legacy is correct.
Yeah, the Chems.
There was never exactly the Chems, and they're trying to make a movie without Matt Damon. A couple more.
Matt Damon.
A couple more here. Guilty of Maximum Fun in the First Degree. Aaron, you might know this.
Guilty of Maximum Fun in the First Degree?
Guilty of Maximum Fun in the First Degree. I will say that this is the fourth in quite a number of movies.
Are they good movies?
A 1990 movie.
Are these good movies?
Good is very subjective in this case.
So no.
Potentially, you might quite enjoy them.
Guilty of Maximum Fun in the fourth
in the first degree.
In the First Degree, 1990.
I will say that all of the films typically have a very similar naming convention title.
Maximum Fun.
Guilty of Max. This person has gone on to do voice acting. Is no longer here. This person has passed away. But
Aaron.
Aaron.
Ernest Goes to Jail.
Ernest Goes to Jail.
I was That's like, it's the- not. It's not Police Academy. Like, it's
okay. Not Police Academy.
Ernest. He is guilty of that. That's one of the better Ernest films, I would say. So yes.
Right. Really?
Yes. In the realm of Ernest, yes. I think that's on the more positive side.
Yeah.
That was a good answer as far as are these good? That was a good answer.
Yeah, it's like some people really enjoy them. I mean,
Mark Hoffman, friend of the show, is a big fan of them, of course. But because that's what I was thinking, Police Academy is like, well, those are bad. Like, there wouldn't be any hesitation by being on those.
The last one here. Not every god has a plan.
Alexander.
I heard Alexander first.
Is this Thor Love and Thunder?
This is Thor Love and Thunder. Yeah. Mm. Alexander, quick on the trigger this week, you won this game 63, so kudos to you. I have just one in terms of tiebreak, which is just for funsies. Two killers are at large. One of them is Dirty Harry.
Is it Sudden Impact?
That is correct. Sudden Impact, the fourth in that.
It's not easy to guess those if you don't know them.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah,
I do appreciate how in the entire list of questions, you didn't go for the most obvious fourth movie tagline.
Which one was that?
This time it's personal.
This time it's personal. I'm going to guess that that is a Jean-Claude Van Damme film.
He doesn't have it's a not. Fourth franchise no. movie. he don't get that far.
This time it's personal. I know this one. I know this one. I don't know what it is.
You'll probably hate it. You'll probably hate yourself when you realize what it is.
Mm-hmm. It's not Live Free or Die Hard, is it?
No.
Because they're all personal.
They tried to kill his wife. I don't know this.
Do you just want me to say it?
Well, what's the year? No. What's the year?
Oh, okay.
All right. Jaws the Revenge.
Oh, that's for the
this
year.
This time it's personal. Yeah. I mean, it was personal. Yeah.
Like, because that tagline very much is a joke in itself.
It was personal. A shark that's not the other shark that's dead, or the other shark that's dead, or the other shark that's dead. That one. This
you
one.
You don't know how shark families work.
You say that, but in the novelization, since the novelizations for Jaws the Revenge was written by the same guy that wrote the novelization for Jaws 2, they make it clear that that shark in the fourth movie is actually the offspring of the sharks from Jaws and Jaws 2.
Boom. Good. Boom. Yeah.
How it should
be. It's all connected, man.
Yep.
Yeah. Aren't you paying attention to the tram rides, guys? They're explaining this to you at the Universal theme park.
If I ever become a tour guide, I might be the only person that, that brings up that little bit of it.
All right. Well, thanks for the game, Abe. That was
You're welcome.
Yeah. Let's move on now. Let's get to about now feedback.
Feedback.
This is where I go over the various questions answered on our Facebook page, facebook.com/podcast. We asked a number of questions to the listeners, and they gave us some answers. And we got a question this week as well.
Mm-hmm.
Alexander Fisher, will throw in your answers as we go through these here.
Yeah, all first right. question here is, what's your favorite Jack Black role? Chris Cleland has Nacho Libre. Tall Ken Nofsinger has either Pick of Destiny or Jumanji. Tenacious D, Pick of Destiny or Jumanji. And Philip Hurd has Nacho Libre. Man, a lot of Nacho Libre love.
Not for me.
What about you guys?
I've got School of Rock.
That's easily mine as well.
And also Bernie, another Richard Linklater movie.
Bernie is great. Yeah. School of Rock and High Fidelity. That would be my picks.
I think I would agree with both of you guys. And then also, just Kung Fu Panda.
Yeah, for sure. Kung Fu Panda.
Oh, you didn't like him getting killed in King Kong, Aaron?
He doesn't get killed in King Kong.
Oh, I thought he gets eaten by like a giant spider.
No, that's Andy Serkis.
Andy Serkis gets killed by like a big slug monster thing.
Yeah, that thing. Yeah.
No, he's Carl Denham. He does the whole way. He has to give the final line of the movie. It's
yeah.
His whole deal.
My bad.
I will say I like him in King Kong. I know people are like, well, he's Jack Black. I think he's good in King Kong. Like,
yeah, he's over the top director guy.
Yeah.
Next question we have here: what's your favorite martial arts movie? Adam Gentry, friend of the show, has Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon. Chris Cleland has The Raid, Bloodsport, The Night Comes for Us, and Kill Bill.
Wow.
Philip Hurd has The Grandmaster. Mark Pace, his friend of the show, has Once Upon a Time in China 1 and 2, Iron Monkey, Drunken Master 2, The Raid, 36 Chambers of Shaolin, Shang-Chi, Enter the Dragon, Fist of Legend, Ip Man, Bloodsport. Okay, so it's my favorite genre. he said mine, which is 36 Chambers of Shaolin. That is my favorite martial arts movie.
I'm going to throw in Game of Death.
I have
Game of Death specifically.
I mean, specifically.
His last one? All right.
Yeah.
Korean, I get it.
I'll go with Fist of Fury and Come Drink with Me.
Come Drink with Me.
Bang. Right.
Yeah.
Okay. The next one here is, what's your favorite animated action movie? Chris Lynn has Rango and Mad God. Todd Libanow has The Incredibles. Philip Hurd writes Porco Rosso. Not only has dogfighting planes, but also an epic fist fight that could that would make Roddy Piper, I added the Rowdy part, and Keith David proud. Favorite animated action movie?
I mean, The Incredibles and Incredibles 2 have incredible action.
Yeah, agreed. Yeah.
But
you also do your favorite movie is Across the Spider-Verse. That has some really good action in it too.
Yes, it does.
Yeah, I definitely appreciate the guy who shouted out Rango.
Mm-hmm.
Rango rules.
That movie has severely gone under the radar.
Mm-hmm. Not by me, it hasn't.
and I'm glad for that, but yeah. Everyone else, like Rango needs to have some sort of resurgence or rediscovery again.
As soon as they put out a filmed version of the live action readings they were doing to record the voices, I'm there.
I'd be down too. Yeah. Any that you have there, Alexander?
I mean, Rango, Incredibles, Spider-Verse. Okay. I can't really think of anything. I guess the bad guys.
Yeah, that's got good action in it. You know, they had a big heist going on.
Yeah, I definitely say the bad guys.
Yeah. I'm going to throw in the Pagemaster.
Okay.
And do you remember the Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde scene? Come on.
Sure. Cowboy Bebop, the movie.
Yes, yeah. I would wholeheartedly agree. Don't even test me on that.
Oh. Beowulf. Throwing Beowulf in there, too.
I mean, which part? Every part?
Well, I mean, the question is an animated action movie, so Beowulf, the movie. Yeah. But he fights naked.
He does, and he just kills a lot of people.
Kills that Grendel.
Yeah.
All right.
And her mother, his mother.
No, he doesn't. He's Grendel's mother.
He gets away.
Who are some actors that you wouldn't have expected to see doing an animated feature? Luke Thompson has Alex Jones in Waking Life.
Wait, what?
Which is the best answer.
Good answer.
That's really good.
Yeah.
And that's like way before he was Alex Jones. It's just like, he's Alex Jones. He screams a lot. Philip Hurt has Martin Scorsese in Shark Tale, which is a good answer because Shark Tale, not a good movie. Scorsese and De Niro, fun in that movie. And why do we not get more Scorsese voice acting? I don't know. Maybe because he's busy every now and then. But still, I'd welcome more Scorsese in animated movies.
Mm-hmm.
Actors you wouldn't expect to see animated films.
Who have done one or who haven't done one?
Who have done one.
Who have
You're done like, one. Oh, that's a curious done. Choice.
Yeah. I mean, curious in a good way, but I always reference our friend Daniel Craig in...
Tintin,
and I was like, oh wow, I couldn't figure out who this person was, and it's because he's actually acting.
Nobody comes to mind immediately. I'm trying to think of like some of the more obscure people who've done animated voices.
Mm-hmm.
My mind's going to things like Wolf Blitzer, who's probably playing a wolf in some movie I forgot, like Zootopia or something.
The Zootopia or the bad guys. I don't know.
Oh, you know what? I mean, this is probably like a long shot, but Stephen Colbert in Monsters versus Aliens.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
He's funny in that. He and Kiefer.
Kiefer Sutherland?
Yeah, he's like a general or something. He's like really crazy.
That is how I picture Kiefer Sutherland these days. In uniform.
Trying to find what Wolf Blitzer movies. It's not, like searching this. I'm like, how do I even search for this?
I was like, I bet you he's like just, you know, he's like he's probably been in like at least 16 movies.
There's got to be some animal movie that he voiced a wolf as a newscaster and his name is Wolf Blitzer.
Like, I know that there's been a lot of puns on his name for sure, like as characters, but I don't know if he's ever voiced them. The next question here, as Aaron's looking that up, what's your favorite animated franchise? Chris Killian has Spider-Verse or How to Train Your Dragon. Philip Hurd has The Spider-Verse. Mark Hoffmeyer, friend of the show, has How to Train Your Dragon. The one I've watched most is Despicable Me franchise, though.
Hmm.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying that for Wolf Blitzer. That's insane to me.
I'll go the probably the most cliched answer, Toy Story.
I mean, it's hard to deny.
I was like, those are solid movies.
It's hard to deny.
That's true, but it's also...
They were doing some shit in Toys R Us. I was like, this is incredible for an animated movie.
Yeah. I mean, it's also like the most obvious answer.
I mean, nobody said it. So
I suppose so.
I mean, you could have said Ice Age.
No one's going to say that.
No one.
Yeah, I mean, Toy Story by default, sure. The Spider-Verse films, I mean... pretty spectacular, so it's hard to deny those. And I mean, I'm two for two on amazing Incredibles movies, so I mean, I'm all about that as well.
That's true. I guess I'll just throw in, you know, Shrek
and Trolls for you.
Diminishing control. I didn't see the world tour.
I've not gone on the world tour, and I've not banded together.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
All right. What are some great films featuring heroes who have to go up against their past? Joe Jans has Kill Bill. Justin Weatherby has Star Wars and The Empire Strikes Back.
Hmm.
Films where heroes go up against their past.
Now, is Luke going up against his past, like in his father?
I'd argue the first Star Wars Obi-Wan's going up against his past.
Yep.
Empire's a little trickier. I would say Return of the Jedi is more, I guess, like, I don't know, Han's going to Lando is going to his past.
Well, I mean,
yes, that is an arc, yeah.
As short as it was.
Yeah.
Because Empire, Luke's just like, oh, you're this Vader I've heard about.
Yeah, and I guess I know the truth now, and I'm just trying to turn you into the good side kind of thing.
Yeah.
Well, even that's all Return of the Jedi. That's what I'm saying. Like, there's not really going.
Oh, yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yeah, Return of the Jedi. Yeah, yeah.
Empire is just like, okay, let's do this thing.
Yeah, and
my dialogue's so much better. Let's do this thing. Was that a lightsaber?
Let's do this thing.
Let's do this thing.
If they use that, because you know these are space cowboys kind of thing, that'd be great. Let's do this thing.
Let's do this thing.
Yeah.
That's what Alden Ehrenreich should have said at the end of Solo to Woody Harrelson. Let's do this.
As he looks straight down the barrel of the camera.
Looks straight down the barrel.
Let's do this thing.
Let's do this thing.
Cut to directed by.
That'd actually be a badass.
That would have worked.
Do this thing. Yeah. Reaches
because
for the
Han
holster.
Solo is that kind of guy.
Reaches for the holster. Black screen. Blaster sound. Directed by Ron Howard. Get that Darth Maul shit out of my movie.
Exactly.
Yeah. What about you, Alexander?
I'll say Captain America Winter Soldier.
Nice. There you go.
Yeah. Good one. I'm going to throw in Gemini Man.
I mean, there's no lie there.
I'm better than you. If you were, you obviously you're not better than me.
Remember why we like that movie where it's just because they have like scenes where him and Benedict Wong are just like hanging out on the couch.
Yeah, because like, that was fun.
That's just a good scene.
Benedict Wong should be more guy in the chair.
Yeah, the action's cool, but there's also scenes where they're just hanging out in couches and it looks cool in 3D.
And you know what? He's living his life.
Yeah, but don't see it at the high frame rate because then you'll see this fake pelican sitting behind Mary Elizabeth Winstead.
I forgot that she was in that movie.
Oh, yeah.
Well, now we move into questions here. But before we move into questions, there was a question from last week that I was really eager to answer, which I wasn't on the show for, which is, what is the best sci-fi movie? What are the best sci-fi movie romances? And Aaron, do you know my answer?
No. What would be your answer?
The answer is Enemy Mine. Now we move into questions for everybody.
That is not what I would have guessed. Okay.
I was like, you tell me that those guys didn't love each other by the end of the movie? they were enemies, Aaron, and then they came together. Lewis Gossett Jr. gave birth to a child.
They made the Oscars kiss.
Now we move to questions for everybody here on the panel today. The question is from Justin Weatherby, who asks, with the next installment of Ghostbusters : Frozen Empire coming, do you feel that they are moving in the right direction? I am most likely in the minority, but I liked Ghostbusters 2016. However, Ghostbusters : Afterlife made me cry in the theater, with the reveal so good and brought back a lot of the nostalgia for me. How are you guys feeling about the direction of Ghostbusters?
Well, Ghostbusters 2016, I did like. I think we both liked. Well enough.
That was the one with
the Paul Feig one with all the women that made the internet eat itself alive because of how horrible that idea was. Because I guess. As opposed to Justin, however, as I've made it very clear, Ghostbusters Afterlife, the end, I feel like dived off a cliff and died a horrible, horrible death. So I did not like that movie. As far as this next installment's concerned, I think we talked about this in the trailer talk, but based on the posters that have been released and the trailers we've seen thus far, I'm not super pleased with the idea that McKenna Grace, the best thing about the previous film, is now like fifth lead behind Slimer, like someone I've been seeing. So I'm like, I don't really know what to think here. It makes me almost mad at Paul Rudd, who's probably not his fault, but it's like, I don't remember Paul Rudd being the star of Ghostbusters Afterlife. So if we're asking about, am I happy with the direction it's going? I wouldn't call it the right direction, but I haven't seen the movie yet. Maybe they're banking on the fact that people just want to see a movie with those people, but it's actually about the other kids and whatnot. We'll see what happens.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think I like, I like Ghostbusters Afterlife fine, except the ending is just too much of, hey, remember this from Ghostbusters?
Mm-hmm.
What if they were back, but they tried not to be funny?
Yeah. So this one, I'll give it credit that it looks like it's trying to do some different things. But at the same time, it feels like it's forgetting the idea that these are supposed to be comedies.
Hmm.
Like this, every time I watch the trailer, it just feels like a standard blockbuster movie and isn't really playing into the idea of, oh yeah, this first movie started out as a comedy. Let's lean into the fact that these are comedies.
A comedy about blue collar guys that happen to deal with ghosts.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
This well, is I mean, the saga continues with the Frozen Empire.
And like, they've got PhDs. They're pretty smart guys.
But it's still like there's a nonchalance,
an everydayness
to what
quality about them. Yeah.
They're dealing with, especially two, even though two is like considered lesser than, that's still more of a, yeah, Ghostbusters. We can hire them for birthday parties, I guess, but they're not that big of a deal. It's like, guys, there's ghosts. Who cares? Whatever. Yeah.
And also, I just find it hard to believe that I forget his name, so I'm just going to call him Dickless.
Oh, yeah, William Atherton. Yeah.
Says there were no witnesses in the first movie. I'm like, did we all see the same movie?
Well, technically, the blue light was like acting like a Men in Black thing where they just got neuralized.
But weren't there people applauding the Ghostbusters?
Like all of Manhattan saw what happened.
All of Manhattan saw a giant marshmallow man arrive.
I don't know how you can hide like the goop that happens afterward.
And then 5 years later, the Statue of Liberty left the island and came into the city.
Didn't the ghost of the Titanic?
The ghost of the Titanic showed up.
I forgot about that actually. I haven't seen Ghostbusters here in a while.
There's a lot of ghosts. A lot of stuff that you can't just chalk up to you had to be there.
The Titanic traveled from the middle of the Atlantic back to the coast?
Yeah, Cheech Marin's there, and he's like, better late than never. It's a good joke.
Yeah. So I guess for me at the end of the day, it's like, I'll see what happens, but really, like, put aside the Frozen Empire and give me the new Empire.
Oh, look at you giving up free movie tagline or free movie titles.
As I like to emphasize, I am always going into a theater optimistic that I'm going to enjoy what I'm going to watch. There is no part of me that's like, let me cross my arms and sit here in dismay as I let this go upon me. Like I want Frozen Empire to be the best Ghostbusters.
Yeah, you're not Marcus Robinson.
Since I want it to be the best Ghostbusters I've seen since Ghostbusters.
Sure.
Well, do I think I'm going to get that? I don't know. It could be. I mean, you know, it has a lot of people I like in it, so
yeah. As far as this goes, I hope that it's good as well. I wasn't as thrilled with Ghostbusters Afterlife with all of the hey, you know, elbow nudging and ribbing and be like, remember this? Look at this! Like this, isn't this very nostalgic for you? It's like, yes, it is, but also like, how are you guys furthering the plot here with these new kids on the screen here by making me look at things like
Ecto-1
or things like finding I forget the name of the ghost machine thing that Dan Aykroyd has in the first one where they're hunting the library, but yeah, there's just a lot of wink references that I didn't really like as much. This one, you know, I've seen the trailer, I might have seen an additional trailer as well. I hope it doesn't really just go into full factory nostalgia making and continues with its own course. You know, I love when things take elements of something and go new with it. Obviously, it's weird because that kind of sounds contrary to what I just gave Kung Fu Panda 4. But still, I think for this particular franchise, it would be nice if you can continue with the McKenna Grace storyline with Aaron was saying, like she's actually really good in the first one. She kind of hopefully is getting this one as well. But I guess if you're going to give more screen time to the original folks, and Janine, then fine. Hopefully it's not the Slimer show, which I wouldn't be mad at. But also I've seen cartoons where Slimer is like a
variety hour.
I was about to say, isn't the real Ghostbusters basically the Slimer show?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So
he's the Urkel of the Ghostbusters universe.
Exactly. He got his spinoff and like he's like friendly now. And just like, you know, weren't you like trying to like kill everybody like a moment ago?
He was trying to slime people. There's
he was trying
difference.
To slime them. Yeah, exactly. I know.
He just has a very passionate way of doing it.
Exactly.
Isn't there some like bullshit backstory that like Reitman established, like Jason Reitman established or something too with Slimer? I forget. There's like some article.
Jason did?
There was some article that came out like around, I think, Afterlife where they established like what Slimer's exact backstory was or something. I was like, I don't even know this.
All I know is that, like, I think when they designed Slimer way back then, they were told to make him look like John Belushi.
Yeah, it was John Belushi.
Yeah, and then they just didn't do, they didn't change anything with Slimer, and they went, oh, it looks just like him.
Now I cannot unsee that. So yeah.
All right. Well, that's enough feedback.
Feedback. Thank you, Justin.
And that's going to bring us to the end of this week's Out Now, Fair and Ape. You can find more of my work, my personal blog, thecodeofzeke.com. Sorry, you can find more of my work at my Substack, thecodeofzeke.substack.com. I got to get used to saying that now. Ooh. And I write movie reviews for Weave Entertainment, Wise and Blue for Criterion and Blu-ray reviews, and I'm on all the Twitter, all the socials at Aaron's PS4. Abe?
You can find more fun stuff over my Instagram, abe.mua, and twitter.com/walrusmoose. Hashtag violence makes my tummy tingle.
Alexander Robinson, where can we find more of you?
You can find me on YouTube at Alexander Robinson Movie and TV Reviews. And if you're a theme park fan, you can also find me on there at Alexander Robinson Travel Channel. I don't post on that YouTube channel as often, but there will be some videos coming up later this month.
Great.
Okay, very cool. You can find all the other episodes of Out Now, Third Name on iTunes, Audible, Spotify, and Stitcher.
SoundCloud, Podomatic, and HHWLOD.
Feel free to email us at outnowpodcast@gmail.com.
Check our Facebook, facebook.com/outnowpodcast, or Twitter, twitter.com/outnow_podcast.
And instagram.com/outnow_podcast as well. And iTunes reviews and ratings. Good to get those. Alexander, thank you very much for joining us this week.
Thank you, Alexander.
Yeah, thank you for having me back on.
For sure. And there's a Godzilla around the corner, so you might be back on sooner than you think.
Yeah.
But the next week's show, the time of this recording, the Oscars have already happened, but there will be the Oscar show, so feel free to check those out. Next week, we have the American Society of Magical Negroes.
Hey.
Certainly contender for best title of the year. We'll see how well the movie is in comparison.
Yeah.
But that's good for this week. So until next time, so long.
And goodbye.
See ya.
To know that something wasn't right, yeah. Oh baby, baby, I shouldn't have let you go. And now you're out of sight, yeah. Show me how you want it to be, yeah, tell me, baby, 'cause I need to know now. Because my loneliness is killing me.
On the trailer for Kung Fu Panda.
Oh, you must choose your successor. But I'm just hungry right now, man. I gotta go eat this fortune cookie.
Skadoosh.
Oh no. This old lady is trying to steal the souls of all the warriors from the spirit realm. Now I have the spirit realm of Tai Lung. Oh no. Who's this fox here that's gonna help me out? We've gotta go on this journey now. Kung Fu Panda 4 in theaters this March.
Pretty good.
Nailed it.
Got the backing track for you and everything.
I know, yeah. You should have started singing Baby.
No one wanted to hear that. Okay. All right.